Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing Podcast. I am your host, Katya Alexson. So, what have you gotten yourself into? Well, together we're decoding marketing to make it accessible for everyone. Cut through the BS and get down to the nitty-gritty. And in each episode, you're going to walk away with a nugget or an insight that you can bring into your professional and sometimes even personal life. So stick around and take a listen to all of the knowledge bombs that are being dropped in every episode. Today, I am joined by a true behind-the-scenes strategist, Jeff Wenberg. Jeff's name might not always be front and center, but if you've been in the digital marketing world for a while, chances are you've felt his impact. With a track record that includes helping scale lead pages, growing Zipify apps to over 13,000 users, and building campaigns that drive consistent B2B sales at Sales Message, Jeff knows what it takes to grow. And in this episode, we dive deep into the challenges that come when you should be converting, but you aren't. We're talking about messaging clarity, offer alignment, and what to do when your sales just stall. His superpower? Spotting that one messaging disconnect that's quietly sabotaging your conversions and fixing it fast. If you've ever thought everything in my funnel is set up, but no one's buying, this episode is your wake-up call. Stay tuned. We're about to unpack some strategic gold. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Jeff, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing Podcast. I'm really excited to have you on here today. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here as well.
Now, today we're going to really be talking about scaling challenges and message clarity. But before we dig into the nitty gritty, I want the audience to get to know you a little bit. So I've got some standard questions. Yeah, are you locked and loaded and ready?
I am ready. I've got my Waterloo in a koozie that should keep it cold for the whole time, and we're ready to rock.
Fantastic. So, easy question. What was your first marketing role? Whether it had marketing in the title or it didn't, what would you consider your first marketing role?
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of like grew up with this, just like not necessarily like, oh, I'm marketing, but just like, like grew up playing in bands and stuff. And so we always were trying to get people to come out to shows and to get people to give a crap about the music and stuff. So, you know, like learning all of that, like when I was really younger, I didn't realize it until actually I started a career in marketing where it was like, oh, I've been doing this for like years and I just had no idea. Yeah. So I would say probably somewhere in my teens, just trying to get people to come out to our band shows.
Excellent. Well, and I'm sure that the listeners are also wondering what kind of music your band played. And more importantly, what was your band name? Because that's key to marketing as well.
Yeah, for sure. So I played guitar and sang. And my first band, we were called The Breakaways. That was like, I grew up and I was in a band with my brother and we played like blues rock type stuff. And
nice.
Went on more to like more original, kind of like similar style, but more like rock oriented stuff called in a band called Mighty Others.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Now that's who you were and where you started. What is your current role right now? What do you do?
Dad, husband. No.
that says it all.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm currently a director of marketing at a company called Sales Message, and we're a text messaging platform. And then I also work with online businesses to just streamline their offers and their pitches, essentially to just communicate the value of what it is they're selling so people actually want to buy it.
Which is exactly why you're on the pod today. Yeah. What do you love about what you do? But with the good comes the bad. So be mentally and emotionally prepared to tell me what you don't like about it. Yeah, let's start with the good. What do you love about what you currently do?
Yeah, like what I love about what I currently do is when I can help somebody who doesn't necessarily have my background or skill set, and I can like help them get to a point where they can like see the light bulb come on and be like, oh my gosh, I can totally see how it all works together now, and experience like somebody getting what they're trying to put out there and then buying their stuff. Like that's like my absolute favorite thing is helping other people experience that. So that's kind of like why I do what I do. And out like taking that maybe like a step bigger. I love putting out a strategy and like seeing all the pieces, like, okay, that's all, everything we need. And then seeing that system kind of come to life and actually generate the results that we were trying to, even if they're not great, you know, we know like, cool, that system worked and now we just optimize it. So that's like one of my favorite parts of it.
Oh, same, same. What is, the endorphins really get kick in when something works, or when it goes live and like the first conversion comes in and you haven't even put any spend behind it. That like is, so oh my fun. God, where else can I put this?
Absolutely.
Now I have my magic wands though. Like I said, with the good comes the bad. If I had a magic wand and could remove anything from your day to day, what would that be?
Yeah, I think, and this may come with just age and experience, but like, honestly, I love the strategy stuff. But then when it comes to actually implementing it, that's where I'm like, ugh, it's just, it's such a grind that like, sometimes I feel like I just don't have the stamina for like, you know, spending hours like crafting the perfect sales page or whatever, where it's like, this is super valuable and important. But like, can I just tell somebody like what I need to have them build, and then like I'll come in and tweak it rather than build it from the ground up. I like to be a finished carpenter rather than like, you know, the framer, so to speak.
You know, I think it's interesting that you say that, because I've also been reexamining the way that I do things as well too. And there is something about the strategy part that's, you know, part art, part science, that makes it really, really fun, and trying to figure that out. And it's not even that you don't want to roll up your sleeves, but to your point, it takes stamina to be able to like do that at the level of obsession that I feel like our younger selves really had it, you know? It's the all-nighters of like a good, of executing a really like well thought out marketing campaign.
So I think, you know, like you said that, something that it like triggered in my head, that I think why that happens is because when I was younger, I didn't know all of the strategy that I know now. So it was just like, let me just execute and execute. Whereas now it's like, wait, let me just pause for a minute and like really think this out. And so like the energy that I spend is more put into the thought of what we're all doing and like how everything is working, rather than just like blindly going and building stuff, because it's like, I don't know, we just need stuff, you know? So it's the whole sharpening the axe before you cut the tree down, spend most of your time sharpening it, and then, you know, just a little bit of time cutting. I feel like maybe that's why I've rotated more towards that. Cause like, I still put in a lot of effort. It's just more into like the thinking. And by the time I get to building, it's like, I'm mentally just exhausted because I put so much thought into the strategy and that kind of stuff. But that also tends to make it work. So
Well, someone's got to do it. I also think, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, your time spending being the executor and doing all of the things that you need to bring kind of that strategy to life is almost the part that you need in order to develop that good, thoughtful strategy. Absolutely. But I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I would say that's actually one of the reasons why I feel like I'm good at the strategy part of it, is because I've had to do all of the stuff at some point in my career. You know, it's like, oh, we don't have anybody to do this. I don't know. I could probably figure it out. And then you go figure it out. And then it just like adds one more piece to your vision, that you can see things that like other people can't, because you've like been in the trenches doing, you know, the hands-on part of it as well.
Yeah. Now you said that you help others as well. So not just, right? So in helping others, is that across different industry verticals? And if it is, what kind of, are there similarities across?
So it's typically like online businesses, coaches, consultants, where they either have like a program or an offer or a service that's like transformational in some capacity, where it's like not like personal growth necessarily, but like you hire them or take their program or course and you get some kind of transformation in yourself or your business. And the similarity is basically just like, usually these people are really good at what they do. And they get great results. They just kind of, with as much love and respect as I can give them, they just suck at communicating how good they are at what they do.
I feel like that would have been taken with lots of respect. To me, what I hear, probably the best example is engineers. I feel like engineers communicate in a very specific way. I call it zeros and ones because I'm like, all right, I can't sell that. I understand that you're deep in the weeds and can tell me how, like, it just is such a totally different language, but they know it. And I can't take that away. And I think the craft of, you know, brand storytelling as well and crafting, right? Like the right message is being able to translate what they're saying, translate the enthusiasm, that spark that they get in their eye and speaking in zeros and ones into, okay, but what does that mean to me?
Yeah. And that's like the big thing that I feel like most people are missing is they're just so deep into their knowing and their expertise that they just assume that everyone else can like see that and are logical. And if I tell you that this is the root cause of the thing you're experiencing, you're just going to be like, oh my God, mind blown. But in reality, what ends up happening is the person hears that and they're like, no, that's not what I'm experiencing. Even though the person that's selling it knows that that's why that's happening. Like usually there's just a mismatch. I call it like, you know, symptom solution misalignment, where it's just like they're just out of alignment a little bit. And all I help them do is like connect the dots with what the person they're trying to attract is experiencing and what their offer is about and, you know, communicate that value so that the person hears it and they're like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I've been looking for.
Now in this, you know, in ensuring that you're crafting the right message, you have to be able to kind of stay up to date with the trends of what's happening in digital all across the board, not just in marketing. So I'm curious, how are you staying up to date with things to ensure that, you know, that strategy that you're pushing forward aligns with how the world is working in digital now?
Yeah. So it's kind of like two pronged, I suppose. One is like the classic strategies that are never going to like go out of style. Like I like to stay up to date on those in terms of like always learning new, like, I don't even know, traditional is maybe not even the right word, but just like psychology based strategies and things that it's like no amount of technology or anything is going to change how people think. So like understanding that I really like to have a firm grounding there. So that way, as things do change, it's like, yeah, okay, that's totally fine that maybe like this tactic has changed, but the strategy we're doing is still the same because it's just like a principle of, you know, it's a fundamental marketing principle. And then in terms of just like the tactics I'm using to implement those, I mean, a lot of times it's just because of content I engage with, I just get inundated with it on social media of just like, oh, hey, here's this funnel, here's this thing. And I'm in a few groups and things like that as well to just always like, you know, keeping a pulse on it. But a lot of it is just like, I pay attention to what I sign up for and like, And then, you know, as you do that, the algorithm keeps showing you more and more of that to sometimes like it gets to a point where I'm usually like, I'm gonna start clicking on some other things just to like make my like algorithm refresh and not show me like all marketing videos like all the time.
It's funny because I just finished interviewing, Steve Miller, who wrote this book called Uncopyable. And one of the discussions that we had was thinking outside of the box, and thinking outside of the box really relates to not thinking almost outside of like your industry box as well, like do something so drastically different so that you can be inspired. If you are, if not, then you're just copying something else. But I thought that that was such like an interesting take on it for sure, that you can gain inspiration from other places. A good segue for what we really want to dig deep into talking about from a the strategy portion of our conversation, which is really scaling. Now, before you hopped on, I asked you, when we're talking about scaling, what do we mean by that? Like there's scaling as a business, so going smaller to larger, like in just size. And then there's also like scaling your message. And you said, well, they're kind of the same. So I'd like you to tell me why they are kind of the same.
Yeah. So I guess I should clarify, like, I think they work in tandem. Like as you scale okay. your offer and bring more people into whatever it is, like your business usually also scales at the same time. So maybe not like equally, but they're okay. both usually on the same kind of trajectory. And so like when I was on the team at Lead Pages, as an example, which is a landing page software, one thing we saw is our business grew along with how many customers we brought in from like our offer that we scaled. So, and what we did with scaling the offer was just like bringing in a ton of people, converting people consistently. And I think we did, I don't know, something like 3 or 4 webinars every week. It was like a ton of webinars. That was our main conversion event. And we just scaled that by bringing more and more people in and doing it more and more often. And I was like team number 11. And I think when I left, it was like 150 or something like that. So it like, it really like scaled both business and the offer. And and then when I moved to the next company I was at and, you know, like working with clients and stuff, I usually see the same thing. As they get an offer that scales, usually their business grows as well. Like they bring on more team members to do more things to help support the people they brought on. Maybe they're like, oh, cool, I've got this really good idea. Now that I've got some funding from, you know, scaling the offer, let's do this business thing. So usually that's what I have typically seen is just they kind of go in tandem with each other.
So how do you prevent it from just kind of stalling out and not working? And I don't know if you have examples of that, or maybe a webinar is an example of something like that, but how do you not stall out?
Yeah. So I do have an example, a very recent one of a client of mine who for years had been, you know, working on his own with clients, and he had a coaching program or like a membership or essentially a membership, and for years, and all it's kind of like slowly started going down and down and down until the point at the beginning of this year in 2025, he had messaged me and he's like, hey, I think I'm gonna like throw in the towel and just look for a job. And what we did, we turned it around to the point in 4 months, he was back at 20K recurring, 20K a month recurring, with doing like just a few clients doing less work than he was doing before when he was making that money. And the difference was before he didn't have his messaging dialed in for the pitch. He was leaning all on his warm audience and warm traffic of people that already knew him through some authority he had. So like he was on a podcast, and he was on the team at a CRM company that's decently well known. And so people knew him from that. And so they like that helped his authority. So he didn't have to like actually dial in his messaging as well, because people were like, I already trust him. So I mean, okay, cool. This sounds about right. But then as he started trying to go more to cold audiences to keep the growth up, what ended up happening is it plateaued, and then the warm audiences stopped buying as much. So it plateaued, and the cold audiences weren't buying at all. So then it started going down to the point where it entered what I call Death Valley, where it's like, this is where your business goes to die. And if you don't fix your offer when it's there, that's where most people are like, well, I don't know, I guess I had a good run and I'm going to fold it, like throw in the towel. So what we did to get things scaling again is we were looking at everything, and I was like, dude, this offer is awesome. Like you, like what you do is like super valuable. And I just don't think people want this, whatever he was saying, you know, it was that he was selling with his offer, like being a customer or like on the client side of that, I would say it's this. And he was like, oh, I didn't even think that, you know, that would be it. But I was like thinking more from like a consumer standpoint of, you know, I wouldn't be looking for what you're saying. I would be looking for this, even though they do the same thing. We're just saying different things. But all I had to do was connect that with what his audience wanted, with what he does. And you like what you were talking about earlier with engineers. He is actually an engineer.
Ironically,
exactly. Like,
they should just get it.
And it was too complicated and too detailed. And so we didn't even dumb it down. I don't even want to say that, but we simplified it. And then what we did is we made sure it aligned with him and what he actually wanted to deliver, and then also aligned with his audience and what they wanted. And so then what we found is, like I mentioned, four months in, he went from like, I think I'm going to close down shop to like, oh man, people are chasing me down to give me money and I'm not even having to sell them. Like literally on the call, I'm just like, okay, cool. And they're like, how can we give you, like, how can we get started? Which before it was like, he had to like sell them and chase them down because he was doing all these things that weren't in alignment with himself and with his market.
Yeah.
And when we got him there, he's like actually working less now and his offer is more simplified. And he actually removed things that he had added previously because he thought he just had to add them to get people to convert. But when he got very clear and aligned on like that kind of triangle, he simplified his offer. So he has to do less, but the results he delivers are more powerful because he's able to communicate that. And then his clients are happy to pay him, you know, the fees that he charges. And like, yeah, we just totally changed around his business by just changing how he communicated his value.
So you are talking a little bit about like messaging and scaling and plateauing, right? Once he reached the plateau, it was really identifying, hey, is this worth walking away from, or is there a tweak to the message that we can do? Yeah. And that makes sense once you start to kind of stall out, but is there pre-work so that you don't even reach the stall out? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like the proactive approach to your sales messaging.
And that pattern of kind of like skyrocketing up and then stalling out, so common. And usually what I've found is that it's because people don't know how to convert cold traffic. So if you wanted to fix this before it was ever a problem, that would be when you need to, you know, work on creating, I call them like enrollment stories where it's like, you're not really, like, I'm not even really talking about the offer because usually people's offers are fine. Like the stuff that they give people, it's usually the story they're telling about that stuff that is the problem. And so fix your enrollment story so that cold people that don't know you at all could hear it and see it and be like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I'm looking for. That is the thing I need. When you get that nailed, that's when you see the scale and you don't hit the plateau. You just keep going up. And that's like what that example I was talking about with webinars at Lead Pages. We had like the offer was so dialed in that like we knew that anybody who got on a webinar, we had like, I don't know, something like, you know, 80% chance of converting them into a customer and that kind of stuff, because we knew that offer was like so rock solid that we could just basically scale it to the moon, so to speak. And so I think if you are struggling with, you know, communicating that, or it's like you don't feel confident in communicating that, that's the stuff to fix. It's usually not a funnel. It's not ads. It's not like content. It's usually the communication of what you're selling that is the problem. And it could be, you know, you're talking about like the root cause that you know is the issue, but the audience you're talking to might not even be aware of it. It could be just your lack of confidence in what you're presenting. It could be a lot of stuff, but usually it in my experience is like focused around the communication of that offer.
So what I like about what you're saying is that when you're talking about just messaging, it's not the original hook. It's not just, I should say, the original hook that brings like that lead in, whether it's cold, warm, or whatever, right? It's not that. It is everything that you're communicating afterwards.
Yeah. It's all of it, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. Like you do, you know, you got to have some hook to get people to just pay attention. But yes, then after you've hooked them, you still have to communicate the value of whatever it is. And like there's, you know, enrollment stories or pitches or whatever you want to call them for like all the steps of the funnel. So it's like from the ad to getting them to your landing page to opt in for whatever. That's a pitch.
Yeah.
You know, once they're on your training or in your email, that's a pitch to get them to move to everything you need to do to move them to the next step is a pitch. And a lot of people don't put any like thought into what am I going to say to these people to get them to actually want this thing?
Exactly. So I got them to the party, but there is no food or drink or entertainment.
Yes,
they're going to leave and say, I'm never going back to that house.
Exactly.
So it really is a little bit more about like, how do you entertain them now that you have them here?
Totally.
What I really like about what you're saying is I actually call them nurture streams, but okay, I like that you're, you talk about what story are you telling them, right? Because I think it forces you to identify the person that's walking through the door, right? Like, so if I take your webinar example, I would imagine that if you're doing that many webinars, the topics are varied throughout the week. Is that accurate?
No, it was the same, straight up same webinar.
Really?
Yeah, it was crazy.
That is crazy and not normal.
So the only reason it was the same is because these people were coming from so many different people's audiences
that
it worked to like not have to redo it. But like, I've also done that where it's like, okay, cool. We've got like five webinars that we cycle through or three or something like that. You know, so it could be either way. It just depends on a few of factors like source of traffic, you know, are these people warm? Have they heard this story before? All of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And what exactly are we pitching? And
what
do you think? Well, this may be a loaded question and I don't know if you'll be able to answer it, but because I was going to ask you like, all right, in this kind of storytelling framework, once I have them in here, how long do I make the story? Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Am I trying to get it done in, you know, three other pieces of communication or ways that I'm reaching out to them?
Yeah.
Or is there six? Is there magic to this
a little bit? I mean, I can't answer that. That was too loaded. No, I'm just kidding.
It was basically a loaded Nerf gun.
just getting pelted over here.
Gotcha.
That's a really good question. And you know, that's actually something that I haven't like thought of like super in depth. I would say off the cuff, usually it's situational, like depending on, is this a VSL they're seeing? Is it a webinar? Is it an ad? You know, each of those is going to be varying in length. I mean, for an ad, I would say, this is like not a hard and fast rule because I've seen variations that work that are longer and shorter, but like a couple minutes at the most, where it's like, because all you're really trying to do is just get somebody to move to the next step, which is to click over to your page, right?
Yes.
Or click over wherever. Yeah, take an action. Then once they're there, that becomes, maybe there's a story there. It could be in your page copy, or maybe there's a video there. And then that's maybe, depending on what that is, if it's like a sales page, that's probably going to need to be a little bit of a longer video. So maybe there's a VSL there. And that could be, I usually make those like 5 to 7 minutes. If it's more expensive, obviously they're going to need more detail and all of that kind of stuff. If it's to book a sales call, you know, that could be just a couple minutes. But then on the sales call, there's a story, or maybe it's a webinar. That's where those get longer because, you know, usually there's a bit more just storytelling involved in helping people see the value and helping people see that you're the one that can deliver the value and building the confidence and all of that kind of stuff.
There are a couple of things that you said that I want to touch on. But first, you said VSL. What does that stand for?
Sorry, video sales letter.
Oh, video sales letter.
Yeah, so that's like, that probably dates me in terms of my like digital marketing experience. But like when I came out, that's like actually how I got started in marketing, is making those for people.
Yeah.
And like they were everywhere and it was literally just slides with a voiceover. And they just like crushed it for all of these people I was making these videos for. And it was like, does this really work? And that's like how I started learning. Cause I just was like, what are you guys doing with this? If you're paying me X amount of dollars and it's like good money for me, like you must be making some. So tell me more. And then just like learning it through the clients I was getting. But yeah, so essentially it's the video version of like a, you know, a long form like sales page.
Ooh, I love that. And you know what? I'm not surprised that it works because I literally just got something in the mail from a company. First of all, I don't even know how they got my address. So I'll dig into that. But then I was also very fascinated. And oh man, I wish that I had recorded this because I actually went to my mom's house. Anyways, I digress, but I opened it up and it was literally a video and it said, "Hi, Katya, you're probably wondering why I sent this." And I watched just about like the whole thing. So I think that there is something to be said about just kind of that video interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And the facts that you've brought up, like, you know, the sales portion of it leads me to my second question that I wanted to ask you or unpack a little bit, is this relationship between marketing and sales and the messaging. Because I feel like oftentimes we think, all right, marketing, you've got the lead. Just tell me when it's right. And then you go there and then they do their thing, right?
Yep.
And I don't know what they do and they don't know what I do. And I don't know. I think that there needs to be a bridge. So we're really consistent. Yeah. And I think that we need to tell our story over and over again. And it sounds different with the medium and then the person delivering it. But what have you found to work in this continuation of messaging? And when does one take over, or is it always collaborative between marketing and sales?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think if you do the job right, the marketing should build demand so that people are like already sold before you ever even get on a sales call. And the sales call is literally just logistics of like, okay, so here's what it is. Here's how much it costs. Here's when it starts. Like, rather than, you know, like what most people think of sales, like, oh, we got to like overcome objections and we got to hard sell and like always be closing, like all of that kind of stuff. Like, I personally don't enjoy that. I don't like being on those calls or like having to do those calls. I like to get things already like to the point where when I get to that point in an interaction, whether it's like I'm doing the sales call or whatever, or if it's like a team member, they're already like queued up and essentially saying like, take my money. And it's just more of like a formality. And how that happens is through the stories and the content we're giving them and like essentially just connecting with what these people are saying they want and giving that to them and showing them like, hey, here is the thing that you say you want. Here is what's happening. If you want to solve this quick, here's the thing that will do that. And here is why. And backing that up with proof, case studies, all of that kind of stuff. That's what I like to do.
That was a good answer. How do you measure then the success of what you're putting out there? Are you measuring it based on like the sales? Like, am I looking at the, you know, my pipeline number to say like, all right, this messaging is working, or is it engagement? Like, what are you, how are you measuring that?
That's a really good question as well.
I'm just filled with them, Jeff.
You're these are great questions. And I don't know if I necessarily have an answer to that. I think now that you're like making me think about it, I think a lot of times what I do is it's like a gut feeling.
Okay.
And I know that like you can't measure that, but
I
do look at, okay, so stats, like let's say it's an ad. I look at, you know, how many leads, like what's the click-through rate, if it's a video view campaign, like what, how long are they watching, all of that kind of stuff in terms of just like, is this working? And like, are they getting to the next step? So I always do trace down the data in terms of like, okay, here's step one, step two, step three, step four. How are the numbers looking there? But ultimately it's like, okay, the customers that are coming in, are they hard to sell? Or are they easy to sell? Like right in the middle, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what is the vibe essentially? Cause I feel like that comes from all of the stuff that you're doing before they ever get there. And if they're coming in like pre-sold, cool, we're doing our job. This is great. If they're coming in and it's like, oh my God, like just 20 objections, like right in a row. And they're just like firing them at me. And it was like, I was taking, you know, like fire and I was hiding under my desk type of a sales call. Then it's like, okay, like we need to do some more like work around the messaging because we got something because they did get on the call, but we're not doing a good enough job of like showing them that like they can trust us and like actually demonstrating our experience and expertise.
I feel like that makes sense to me. What I'm hearing you say is that you measure the success of the tactic for that like very specific message. And then you also tie it back with, you know, the feedback you would get from the sales team of like, what are you getting? Yeah. What does this lead, you know, at what point is this lead coming to you? Is there heavy objections? Yeah. Do you need to do a lot of education? So again, there's that bridge between sales and marketing that needs to go both ways, right?
Yep.
Now I've grilled you on all of that stuff. Now I want to grill you on just kind of looking ahead of the trends. What do you think as marketers we need to be on the lookout for that will impact or could potentially impact what we're doing from a messaging or a non-messaging perspective?
Yeah, this, I'm just like such a firm believer. If you have your messaging dialed in, so many other things just become irrelevant that like, I've heard so many marketers freaking out about like AI, you know, email's dead, webinars are dead, like whatever. It's always something.
Everything's dead.
Yes. Everything is always dead. And it's like, no, actually it's not. The people that are succeeding though, have really dialed in their stories of like communicating the value of what they do so that the people that hear it are like, yes, oh my gosh. And the ones that don't are the ones that are like out there, like, what kind of new funnel could I make? Or, oh, here's this new ad strategy where it's like, if you dial in the messaging to the point where no matter what platform or technique or strategy you use, it works, then you're golden. It, like you're almost like future proofed because it's like literally the foundation for everything. Yet most people just overlook it and go straight for like the strategies and tactics when it's like, I don't know about you guys, but like, I don't want to be rebuilding my funnel every 2 months. I would rather like nail in the messaging so that like that could exist for a little while and give me some breathing room to maybe do some research and figure out what are people in my space doing? Like what you know, new tactics might I want to incorporate instead of doing it from like a reactive place, you're doing it from a proactive place.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I think that you're absolutely right. When you do nail down the messaging, it's more of like an amplification challenge, right? Like what am I currently using to amplify this message? Is my message being received by the audience that I want to receive it? And if not, where else can I amplify this message that I do have dialed in? And I would imagine it's an iterative process until you do lock it in.
Yeah,
and as you grow and your product grows as well too, sprinkling that in to as like almost like quote unquote chapters to your sort of brand story.
That is like such an iterative process. And the cool thing is like you can test this everywhere. So it's not just like, oh, I got to test it on ads or I got to like build a new funnel to test this or like send out emails to test it. You can use all of those, but you can even use it like in a conversation like this. You can use it in a conversation with your spouse. You can use it in a conversation with some random person you meet and just see like, hey, did they understand what I said? And were they like, oh my gosh, that's cool. Or were they like, wait, huh? You know what I mean? So when like somebody that is like a complete random person understands what you're talking about, it's like, you're on the right track. Keep going down that road.
Yes. I always equate it to like how I would tell my family over Thanksgiving dinner, there's always like the aunt or the uncle or, you know, the cousin that's like, but tell me more about this. And you have to figure out a way. Cause I often think that, especially with messaging, we overcomplicate it and just needs to be simplified.
Yes.
Like use the words that you would use at a Thanksgiving dinner to explain what you were trying to explain.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you have shared so much information. I have one final question for you.
Yeah.
And that is, if you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I would give myself so much advice, but I'll focus it on marketing. So I would say spend your time learning how to dial in your messaging faster.
Okay.
And then spend your time really like testing it out, iterating on it and getting that nailed before you build all kinds of stuff and learn all kinds of crazy techniques and everything, because you're just going to overcomplicate it.
Mm, I love that. It's also very simple, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I think it's very easy to follow. Well, thank you so much for coming on here and just sharing all of your insights and knowledge. I know I'm walking away with insights that I will make into actionable things that I do with my marketing strategy as well. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was such a fun conversation. I appreciate it.
Welcome back. Let's talk takeaways. First takeaway, a plateau doesn't mean the end. It's just a signpost. One of the biggest myths in marketing is that if a campaign stops performing, it's over, it's broken, that it's time to scrap it all and start fresh. But as Jeff so clearly illustrated with his client who hit what he called the Death Valley, the plateau, wasn't the end of the road. It was a sign. It was the business's way of saying, hey, something's not right here. It's misaligned. Come take a closer look. Instead of overhauling everything, they shifted the way the offer was presented. Same service, same value, but a different message. One that actually clicked with what the audience thought that they were looking for. And within 4 months, that business went from, I think I'm done, to people lining up to buy. I think of it like a musician playing to a crowd that's just kind of not responding. It's not that the music isn't good. It might just be the wrong set list for that audience. The key is tuning your performance, not throwing out your instrument. So when your marketing stalls, resist the urge to burn it down. Look under the hood. Examine the message. Because sometimes the smallest pivot in perspective opens up a whole new path forward. It's not the end. It's a redirection. Okay. Key takeaway number two. Don't just open the door, offer a seat at the table. What do I mean? Getting a lead into your funnel is like inviting someone into your home for dinner. But how often do we stop at the doorway? We obsess over ads, landing pages, flashy hooks to get them to knock. But once they're inside, too many of us forget to offer a seat, pour a drink, and have a real conversation. Jeff described this so well when he talked about how every stage of the funnel is actually an opportunity to pitch. From the ad to the opt-in page to the sales call, each one is a moment to continue the story, to build connection, and to reinforce your why behind the offer. It is not enough to get attention. You have to guide attention. That's the heart of storytelling. And what I love about how he explained it is, we're not here to convince people to buy. We're here to make it so clear, so resonant that they realize it's what they've been looking for all along. When you do that, you're not just selling, you are serving. So the next time you get someone to click, don't pat yourself on the back just yet. Ask what's the next story they need to hear to feel seen, understood, and ready to say yes. And my final key takeaway, messaging is the foundation, not the fancy stuff on top. We live in a marketing world obsessed with tools, new funnel software, ad strategies, AI hacks, you name it. But none of that matters if the messaging isn't dialed in. It is the equivalent of building a house with granite countertops and smart lighting, but on a foundation made of sand. Won't work. Messaging isn't the decoration. It's the structure. It's the through line that ties every stage of your buyer's journey together and makes every interaction feel intentional and aligned. And this is where I think so many marketers, especially newer ones, get a little stuck. We're told to grow. We need more content, more platforms, more features, more leads. But more isn't better if it's not clear. The reality is your message is your brand. It's the lens through which people decide, is this even for me? And when that message is misaligned, when you're talking about root causes and your audience is stuck on symptoms, you lose them, even if your solution is spot on. So here's my challenge to you and one that I'm constantly revisiting myself. Don't chase the next marketing tactic until your message makes people stop and say, that's exactly what I've been looking for. Because once your message is right, everything else gets a little bit easier. You don't need to rebuild your funnel every quarter. You just need to amplify what already works. That's what I took away. What did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. A special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny A. And thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya signing off.